Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, welcome to the 378th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode was brought to you by patron Benjamin Willis Teff, Earl Martin, Turtle, Ethan Eskelson, and Debbie Bradshaw. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Oren Kaplan, and today we are talking about burnout, we are talking about trying to go on vacation, and we're talking about balancing your work and life, a topic that we broach many, many times on this podcast, but we have our own personal stories this week that are related to balance or imbalance in our lives, and we thought it would be fun to talk about yet again.
Yeah, I think that certainly it's something that people deal with all of the time, but I think that I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other things that filmmakers have to do, need to feel motivated to do, to have a successful career outside of your regular screenwriting and pitching and all the stuff that we talk about on the show all the time. So all of the other things that you still have to kind of like get your butt in gear to do to make your career happen, and kind of part of why we live in Los Angeles in the first place.
Part of living in LA, I feel like, does contribute to the burnout. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the pro and con of living in an industry town is like, I had a friend say the other day, like, oh, I just wish I had more people to talk to about movies. I need some movie friends. And it's truly not an exaggeration to say that 100% of the people that I know are movie people or the partner of a movie person.
I'd say my friends that I like actually hang out with are probably half and half.
Yeah.
Film people, non-film people. Yeah. It's my wife's friends are kind of mostly non-film people, friends from college. Yeah. My friends, you know, I did not go to film school, so that probably affects it too.
Yeah. Not only did I go to film school, but I also, my freshman year was in the cinema floor. So my dorm was all people who loved movies. Like there were murals of like poorly painted murals of different movies on the walls and stuff. Like it was so I didn't ever meet anybody outside of that. Like when people are like, oh, what do? You don't say, oh, you're in the film industry. You have to, you're like, oh, this person's an editor, this person's an actor, this person's a screenwriter. Right. Like that's how you delineate.
This is an avid editor. This is more of a, she's more of a premiere gal.
Yeah. Truly though.
Well, cool. Yeah. So why is burnout on your mind? I mean, this is we were pitching topics to each other. I'm about to go on vacation tomorrow for 2.5 weeks, which is a very scary thing to do for a freelancer. So that's kind of why I brought it up. Why did you bring it up? What's going on in your life?
I mean, I think it's twofold for me. Regular listeners of the show will know that I'm show running right now. And so I'm managing a team. And so I'm dealing with the well-being of a number of people and kind of keeping tabs on where they are creatively. And, you know, it's a YouTube channel. And so, like, the churn, the grind is very real. You know, we put out between the two shows close to 100 things a year. You know, like, there's a few, we have, we're dark in July and then a few holidays. But, like, the main show I work on has a 48 episode order. And so we had a wrap party. We had a week off and we were straight into
the next season.
Grinding and 48 episodes of another season, basically. So it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a podcast, but it feels like that maybe doesn't do the amount of work justice. There's still...
But it's a video podcast.
It's a video podcast. So imagine it's like...
It's like a YouTube show, more than a podcast.
Yeah. It's akin to like a John Oliver or a Daily Show in terms of like... There's a lot of graphics and there's a lot of jokes and there's a lot of research. And you kind of have to take these big ideas and whittle them down into things that are digestible for people and entertaining for people, but also have a lot of insight. And so we've got a team of researchers. Anyway, I'm managing a lot of people and also like in the weeds on all of it. So I personally have just been confronted with what do I do personally and how do I teach that to other people? And also, you know, I'm still working on this feature. I've got new producers on. Like, there's still a lot of other stuff going on. And also, I'm trying to enjoy my daughter's second year of life. We just got back from the zoo. I got a sunburn this weekend. It's awesome.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. Put sunscreen on your knees, everyone.
It's a real Matt Enlow endorsement.
truly. So that's why it kind of came to mind when you brought up how you were feeling stressed. So, and I think that our two predicaments are both pretty relatable and also stark in comparison, that I'm trying to figure out how to balance it on a day-to-day basis, how to keep myself from burning out minute by minute, whereas you really have been sprinting to then take 2.5 weeks off.
Yeah, in a way. And then, you know, there's a famous joke in Hollywood, which is if you want to book a part, you know, as an actor, sure, you book a vacation, right? Like anytime you decide to go out of town is when all the work is going to come.
And yeah, we haven't caught up because I know you had a good number of pitches due tomorrow.
Yep, tomorrow. Well, I'm leaving the country tomorrow. Yeah. So they're actually not due tomorrow, but I have to turn them in tomorrow. Otherwise,
I see.
I have to be working on treatments while I'm... First of all, I'm doing like a 30-hour trip to Israel because of our layovers and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the two kids and all the stuff.
And also, just as a technical side note for people who are like, oh, 30 hours in the plane, this is awesome. And like, you could do... Like, you can... Maybe you can write treatments in the air, but like, your treatments are super image dense, and so you can't... You can't do the sort of like searching. It's just, it's like working in slow motion. It's like trying to run a marathon also, in a mud pit.
I have a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old and I don't think the Wi-Fi over the middle of the Atlantic is so great.
Yeah. It's impossible to use is what I'm getting at.
And on top of that, I have, I have this big shoot coming up in July and it's like a 30 or 40 page script. It's like this 45-minute piece. And they want notes too. Like I already have all my airplane stuff allocated to other projects. Not to mention just like, the family of it all and the whole idea that
decent partner.
You're supposed to be on vacation and disconnect in some way. So that's stressful. And then the burnout, it's funny because the burnout you're talking about is kind of, it seems like birthed of the YouTube algorithm, right? Which rewards and all these social networks and media networks that rewards a lot of content, regular content, right? The more regular you are, the more your show will go to the top. And then once you're at the top, you have to keep the output up. Like Mr. Beast can't take like 3 months off, right? Or any of those people because they will like lose their standing. And so it just creates an environment where the only way to succeed is to keep going and keep going and keep going. And you never really have time to reassess things.
That's an astute observation, but it's actually kind of not what I'm talking about because part of the reason I'm there is to streamline things so that we're banking things. It's more just like, that feeling of like turning the hourglass over. It's like, okay, we did an episode and then you turn it back over, which is maybe what you're getting at.
Right. Like maybe if you're banking episodes, I don't know. For me as a freelance director, I'm just fighting really hard to get a job. And then I get if I either don't get the job, which is a bummer because I just spent a week trying to get it. And if I do get the job, I do it, I shoot it, I prep, I do all the work for it. I'm done with it. And then I just need to start it all over again. It's like, like what you're saying. Like you had a couple of days off and you're back to the grind.
There's the churn, right? There's the grind. The thing that I'm dealing with personally is that for once that anxiety that you're describing is kind of taken care of, right? Like, which is part of why I signed up for it. You know, I was like, writer's strike is coming. I'd love to just get back into like some narrative. Sounds good. But the new anxiety that bubbles up of like being reminded now that pandemic is nice and far behind us, the baby is getting, I don't want to say easier every day, but like more time is emerging for myself. And I'm reminded of like when I first started, I was at drinks all the time. I was at mixers all the time. I was at meeting people, you know, I was doing not the Hollywood thing, but a version of it for sure, you know, and that because I was immersed in Comedy Central and development and all that, you were going to shows and, like I said, mixers and film festivals, all of the kind of other things that we need to do where you build relationships. And like people call that networking, and that's not inaccurate, but like it was really more like developing relationships. And so that when the time came for me to take a project out, or someone hit me up with something or whatever, when an opportunity arose, I had a network of people who were all equally hungry and excited and passionate that I could go to, whether it was putting two other people in contact or something I needed myself or whatever. And over the years, I've let that network dissolve a little bit. You know, you have to nourish that. You have to keep people engaged. You have to keep them aware of what you're doing and vice versa. You have to help them and reciprocate all of that stuff. And, you know, now we're, like I said, outside of the pandemic, people have moved on. People have changed careers. People have shifted gears, all sorts of different stuff is happening. And so I think it's occurring to me, and also my personal goals are different now, right? Like there are other ecosystems that I'm interested in being a part of or engaging with or reestablishing myself. And so like, you know, you wake up and you're like, well, dang, I've got an evening free. I could write a screenplay, hang out with my wife, go to this party, or, you know, this whatever mixer or award show or something. You know, that all sounds so Hollywood and so dumb, but it's all like, those are all opportunity costs that you have to weigh against each other. And it felt like, not like we were done having to do that stuff, but a little bit. Like once you're established, you're not quite so hungry to do that work. And I guess for all the reasons I just listed, it would be helpful. It would be smart to kind of like meet some new people and cross-pollinate some ideas. Do you, which is a separate feeling than, I've got a incoming call, I need to pitch on something, or I need to do this or that or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. My like idea of burnout is like totally like orthogonal to that. Cause I think of like, I love networking. I love going to parties and events and screen. I mean,
what was the last networking event you went to, Warren?
I went, the DGA has like an annual meeting I went to on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
And I actually met, I ran into many people that have been on the podcast, hung out with Yoko and Maureen Barucha, and she was with like the whole, all the Jimmy Kimmel directors. Mm-hmm. And I talked to this one guy there named Will, who has been directing. He's been on Jimmy Kimmel for 17 years straight. Mm-hmm. And he's a director. And I was like, whoa, like you must be set. He's like, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I have a job every single year. You know, they shoot for 40, 50 weeks, however many weeks a year. He's like, every once in a while I get to like take a little gig on the side here or there, but honestly, it's really hard. He's like, I don't really know life outside of the Jimmy Kimmel ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then I met these other Jimmy Kimmel directors that had left to do their own thing. And they were all like, hey, you know, if they need anyone, let me know. Like, sure. I'm happy to fill in for you if you need to take some time off.
The grass is always greener.
Yeah. So one of the questions I asked a lot of directors that I was talking to yesterday was a super obvious question to ask at like I mean, there was literally like 1,000 directors all together there. And I would just ask them like, so how do you get jobs? because that's like the job of a director is basically to get jobs of a freelance director. And, you know, most directors are freelancers, even the ones like a Brenna Malloy, who's been on the podcast, who directs like 1,000 episodes of the Chicago shows every year. She still, you know, I'm sure she gets offered a lot of things now, but at some point, like, it still ebbs and flows, right? You go through the time where you have five things at once and you have to choose the one.
Well, and the Kimmel example, I think, is a really good, it shows, symbolizes what I'm talking about here, right? Like, it's easy to be in a crew, not easy, but like, you, once one is in a crew, whether it was College Humor or Ellen or Kimmel or the Dick Wolf universe, right? You kind of, you're working with the same people and life is good, but then you look around and you realize, oh, if one of these franchises goes away or somebody retires or my main connects move on or whatever, then that opportunity is dried up. And so maybe you need to diversify a little bit, but you also need to be loyal to these people and you need to be available to them. I mean, it sort of happened with me and with at Ellen, you know, like Ellen went away. And so that springtime gig dried up. Right.
Yeah.
And so like, and everyone goes their separate ways. And sometimes you get a phone call from your old friend from that company. And sometimes you don't. Do you know what I mean? And so I see what that Kimmel director was talking about, because I'm sure that they've seen that many times. They're like, oh yeah, I'm doing great right now. But like, what if Jimmy retires? Do I know enough people to stay, to maintain the standard of living that I've been maintaining?
Yeah. No.
Have I saved enough? You know, all of that stuff.
Right. Yeah. As a freelancer in the entertainment industry, I think there's like three main stresses. I'm just saying these are off the top of my head, but one is, can I get a job doing this, you know, to make money? Two is, you know, can I be creatively satisfied? Like, am I growing myself as like an artist and like a filmmaker or actor, whatever you do? And three, like, how can I make enough money to be able to retire and all that stuff, right? And
sure.
And so the people that have the full-time jobs, like, you don't have that daily stress of like, what's the next job, right? It's, so it's like a whole element of stress that's like removed from you. Yeah, so I think that that's like a little bit part of the balance here and part of the stress and the burnout. But to rewind back to what I was saying, how I think about burnout, I think of like when I first moved to LA, I just worked nonstop. And this is an industry that very much rewards nonstop work. Like, if I wasn't a dolly grip on set today, I was writing a script. If I wasn't writing a script, I was shooting a script. If someone asked me to go work on their short film, I would go work on their short film. When I'd get home at night, I would edit and edit and edit. And then I'd shoot test videos and do all these different things. And I was just working like 100% for myself. Like, my entire day was dedicated to learning how to be a better filmmaker, meeting more people, and just making things and making things and making things nonstop so I could show people what I made so maybe they would hire me. And at some point, you just can't just keep going. And even like, you know, that last week I got two opportunities to pitch on things, and I have my treatments are both due tomorrow. And what is a treatment? A treatment can be anything. It can be three pages saying like, hey, I really like your script. Here are a couple of thoughts on how we can shoot it. And here's a reference video. Done. You know, let me know if I got the job. Or it can be a 50-page presentation. Here's how the wardrobe's going to look. Here's how the music is going to be cut together. Here's a test video I made. And I do feel like when I make the test video, when I do the Photoshop the things,
when you put in the work, you tend to get a better result.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's still not guaranteed. So like, even this past weekend, it was Father's Day. It's a holiday today, Juneteenth. It was, you know, Saturday was all the birthday parties and all the regular things you have to do as like a parent. And I had to spend all, I've been up till 2 a.m. every single night for the last five nights working on my treatments and writing and pulling images and doing all the things, because during the day I have to do all this family stuff. And I'm just like so, so tired. And there's a very good chance that I won't get either one of these jobs that I'm like killing myself for. And that's to me where like the burnout like comes into play? Like, at what point do you say to yourself, like, yeah, this job is like not
worth it.
Like, yeah, I'd rather have a little less money and not fight for this job. And it's tricky because when you're trying to get jobs, it's not just for yourself. It's for like your crew. It's for the people that are finding you the opportunities. And if you say no 3 or 4 times in a row, then they probably will stop coming to you. And that's the other freelancer fear.
Yeah. Yeah. I think also maybe the thing underneath all of that is that, and this is the commonality between where we both are. If you do bigger and better spots, and bigger and better in spots, like your quote goes up, your reel gets better, it gets hypothetically, it gets easier to book these jobs, right? And on my side, oh, I write another great screenplay, my film goes to South by Southwest and gets picked up, and it is a, you know, you can watch it on Netflix or whatever, and like my profile raises, maybe I pick up jobs, get easier for me too, right? And it's, the question becomes like, when have we leveled up enough that we can relax, or does that not exist?
I think it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And I've kind of started thinking more and more that it doesn't exist recently when I'm pitching against directors that are kind of famous, or like, I feel like I'm fans of their work. I'm like, oh, this person directed this like amazing documentary that was at Sundance 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yep. What's he done since then?
Sure. Did you see Guillermo del Toro had a tweet about how directing is eating shit sandwiches? No. Or a sandwich of shit, he phrased it as.
No.
He was like, yeah, it gets a little easier. You get a little more bread the more successful you get. But I had 5 projects that were rejected this year.
I mean, J.J. Abrams had a job like that got canceled like after pre-production this year. So you can delegate some things a little bit more, and you can bring on like a great concept artist, you know, and a great treatment designer and a great image puller, but you still have to write everything yourself. You still have to like be invested in the project, and you know, so
yeah, you can never phone it in. Yeah.
I think, I don't think it gets easy. And I think as we get older, all those like swings for the home run, like you said, you know, you could work on your movie and get into South by and do all these things. Like, none of that is guaranteed. You can work on your movie for 10 years and not get into South by, right?
Yeah.
And
or worse than that, get into South by
and nothing,
you
happens.
Know, make, you know, I have an MG, like it goes really well, you make $20,000 or $30,000.
Right.
Let's say you made $100,000, which is like a moderate success. That's a movie you've heard of. I know plenty of people whose movies we've seen and love didn't make that much money. Made way, way, way less. Mm-hmm. And then nothing happens.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like, oh, absolute failure. It's like, oh, no, like a decent, like just not everything everywhere all at once.
Right.
Like just a moderate bona fide success is still an investment in your career rather than a check you can really cash.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, on Making Movies is Hard, Liz and Ulrich were talking about how they're both trying to get their next movies off the ground, and how people are like, oh, you've only directed one movie. Oh, you've only directed 2 movies. Like, we don't know if you're like ready to handle this next bigger movie. And
yeah. Yeah.
First of all, that's like a ridiculous thing to say, but also it really doesn't matter like what you've done in the past. Like, it just matters like if people are excited about you right now. And it's hard as we get older to be the exciting person at every turn, you know, compared to new, young, exciting people. So
yeah. I mean, I think that like and this maybe is the perfect segue, I think that young versus new, like versus, you know, the stalwart, I think it's, you just have to inspire confidence in people. And the way that we often inspire confidence in people is by being the most committed and the most on top of it and the most knowledgeable and the most experienced and the most thorough. So that for you means a 60-page deck with a concept video and incredible jokes and super rich imagery. That could mean being the most networked up person in the room who knows everyone and can connect everyone. That can mean the best writer who's like been on the Nichols for five straight screenplays in a row, you know? So whether that's, there's lots of different ways to do it, but what we're really saying is that it just takes an intense amount of drive and time. And we are not lacking in drive, but we are lacking in time, and we are interested in living our lives outside of film in a way that we hadn't been before, right? And the drive is the problem, right? Like, if we just didn't have drive, we could just go get another job and move to a cheaper city and be fine.
Yeah. And it's funny, so, we talked about this, I might have mentioned it before, but like, both you and I, both when we got our houses, we basically, like, you find all of a sudden, you know, in these projects around your house, like we built a rental unit, you just redid a bunch of things in your yard, that is giving you more like creative satisfaction sometimes than going to this drinks thing or, you know, writing a screenplay.
Yeah.
And it's like I took 3 months off of like filmmaking basically to like work on my house. And it was incredibly satisfying. And so, like you're saying, at some point you realize that there's more to life than just fighting so hard to get like your short film made to get into that film festival.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think this segues into our next topic of what we do to manage things, right? So it's not just that I want to live my life and then, you know, make my yard more amenable to my family and friends. Specifically, I had like a kind of a big project that we had been talking about literally since we moved in. And I realized midway through, you know, had multiple steps. I built a cowboy tub. We don't need to get into the weeds on it, but like I had to go pick up a stock tank from a tractor supply place. I had to download schematics. I had to go to Home Depot 35 times. I had to buy some power tools. I had to research those tools. It wasn't just like a weekend warrior quick thing, you know, that you can kind of wing. You had to really plan it. And I remember very distinctly going to pick up the main part, which, you know, again, you have to kind of not special order, but it's a thing. I had to go rent a truck and all this stuff. And I realized that the high that I get off of putting together a plan, setting an intention, putting together a plan, executing that plan, all of which is what filmmaking is. We wouldn't have careers if we weren't chasing that feeling. Producing. I produced my backyard. And I'm sure every filmmaker who like gets into the weeds on things, they can relate. But that was the high that I was chasing. And I think the further in your career you get, the less control you have over whether or not you win the job. You could write a great 50-page treatment or a Nichols finalist screenplay, but the stakes are so high that you can't just manifest it. You can't just go do it. You can't just shoot it, right? And so I just needed that taste. I just needed to be like reminded that I'm good at making plans and doing the thing and putting in the work, the sweat equity, and to just like enjoy it. We enjoyed it this last weekend. That's how I got my sunburn. And like, you just kind of, sometimes you need those, it's the same as shooting a short film or writing a spec or shooting a TikTok. You need those small bites sometimes because we're trying to, you know, you need a cupcake if you want to bake a wedding cake every once in a while, because you need to be reminded of what it tastes like to eat frosting and cake together at the same time, just to keep you interested. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think what this next section, we're supposed to talk about like how we're dealing with this burnout, right? And I guess, are you saying doing
that was
another creative project aside from...
Another creative project, but specifically with some of the tools that we use as filmmakers, I think it was surprisingly gratifying and unintentional, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you have projects where it's very easy to measure your progress, they're great, as opposed to a lot of the, you know, like for those of us that are writing and pitching and trying to get jobs that aren't
just
guaranteed.
Open-end, amorphous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think like the other things that I try to do to tackle burnout, the most obvious one, which for some reason is incredibly hard for us creative types, is to say no, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason is very clear. It's FOMO, right? If I say no, what if that job could have led to a canned line? What if that job could have led to $100,000? What if that job could have led to being perfect for my reel for the next big job? You say no, and all of a sudden you've missed 6 Super Bowl spots in a row and an Oscar, right?
Yeah, I have a problem, which I feel like I need to give people a reason. Mm-hmm. Like actually someone, mm-hmm. someone that listens to our podcast, just contacted me on LinkedIn and was like, "Hey," and I didn't really know who it was. And they're like, "Hey, Oren, great to find you on here. Like I'd love to schedule some time mm-hmm. to chat with you." And I looked them up and they had like a background in advertising. And I was like, "Oh, is this like a creative director or something that wants to like potentially mm-hmm. consider hiring me or put me up for some job?" And then I was like, "Oh, sure. What is this about?" And they're like, "Oh, I heard on your podcast that you, you know, we're talking about pitching and I'd love to pick your brain on how to pitch better or something." Uh-huh. And I was like, okay. I don't just like every podcast listener ever like spend 30 to 45 minutes talking to them about what they want to do in their life. I have to say no. And I was,
that's why we have a podcast. That's literally why.
Yeah. And I was starting to like write my response of like, why not? And then I just never respond because I feel bad. And I'm just like a very guilty no sayer. But anyway, I do believe mm-hmm. just saying like, "Hey, I'm not busy," or "I'm not available," is important. On the other hand, if someone is offering me a job, I used to be very afraid that like other jobs might come up and being mm-hmm. offered. And mm-hmm. like my philosophy now that I've learned from other people is you just say yes to every single thing until you're booked, you know, like mm-hmm. if 10 people offer you a job for next weekend, you just say sure. And then once like the job is 100%, that's when you deal with the other jobs. But 9 out of 10 times the other jobs will go away or reshuffle or dates will change or whatever. So anyway, that's not at all answering the burnout issue, but
it's related for sure.
Yeah. And it's why I think we live in this place where we are just afraid to miss opportunities and we're afraid to like level up, and we've all been at the right place at the right time and turned something down that ended up being mm-hmm. like a huge mm-hmm. opportunity that we missed out on.
Well, and just circling back to that point, I think that, look, that comparison, it's easy to look back and be like, "Well, shoot, I would have been on Key and Peele and then I would have gotten movies and this and that if that had happened." But the truth is, it's like, the material has to spark for you the way it did for them in order for the director to bring it to life, in order for it to catch the attention of decision makers, in order for it to get you a TV show. Do you know what I mean? And so like, if you're like, "Whatever, I don't get this sketch," that's okay. Like you can say no because the material doesn't work for you. I can't think of how many times I've been like, "I don't know if this is funny or not." And then you pitch something that's counter to their take, and then you see it later and you're like, "Oh, now I get it. They were the right person for the job and this is funny, but it wasn't for me." And like, that's hard. But I think that in trying to process what I'm feeling and what I'm motivated by, being reminded that, like, I think you and I are really money oriented right now because of family and all of the stresses of wanting to, you know, send our kids to college and retire and all that stuff. You see it. You see your future. You see the next 20 years pretty quickly. I watched Father of the Bride last night, and that's what that whole movie is about. Is like, "Oh, I'm standing at the precipice of being old."
Mm-hmm.
And my kid was, you know, a little girl. It felt like 5 minutes ago, and now here we are, right? So that's what we're at the other end of that spectrum, thinking about all of that stuff. But if you can follow your interest and passion and chase the projects that are creatively exciting to you, that tends to, historically, that's really paid off for me, and I think for you too, right? And again, the problem is, it's like, okay, well, you got to make a living and then also do all of the other things to cultivate that, the opportunities to shoot sketch videos for free that could become TV shows, or the short film, or the proof of concept, or all that stuff. And so here we are talking in circles.
Yeah.
Back at the beginning. So we had a few recommendations for people.
Yeah. And I think this one was not on our list, but I'm going to propose it.
Hip shot.
Is try to, especially when you're like single and workaholic, you know, living with roommates and just moved to LA or whatever, and just getting into the business, especially when you're young. And this is advice people gave me that I did not take. Like, try to think of your financial future a little bit in a way where, like, if you're making good money, don't, you know, maybe try to
save some money, invest some money.
Put some away, really try to invest in real estate, try to do whatever you can to.
So, Oren, I didn't do any of that. You're better at money than I am. Did you do any of that when you were young? And if not, because I think the answer was kind of mostly no, right? Why didn't you?
Well, so when I was young, I just believed that I should gamble on myself. And I thought, you know, when I think I've told this story before, but when I was an engineer, my idea was, as soon as I get $100,000 in my bank account, I'm going to quit being an engineer, and then I'm going to move to LA, and I won't be able to, I'll be able to just work and learn and work for free and not rely on, like, not need to get a retail job or something, because I'll be able to.
You have a nice little bankroll, and if you're not making a ton of money, but you're still making some, you could be okay for a while.
Yeah. And so I moved to LA. I sold all my stock options at the company I worked at, which literally would have been like, I think I sold the stock when it was worth like $30 and it's worth like $400 now or something. I would have, you know, made like $1 million. So I wouldn't have done that. And then I just kind of started burning through it. Not, you know, I wasn't like partying or anything, but I did that. And then when I started getting work again, getting paid, as soon as I hit $100,000 again, I put it into a feature film. So
The short answer, I was trying to lead you to something that you've said to me before, and it stuck with me because I relate. You think you're going to be rich.
Yeah. You think, hey, and everyone's like, make stuff, go make a movie, make a short, make this, make that, buy a camera, get your own gear, just shoot it, all that stuff.
And to be fair to us, when we were children, if you were a working director, you were pretty rich, you know?
Yeah. You had it was a pretty cushy lifestyle.
A very comfortable lifestyle, for sure. Like, if you were a working commercial director, TV director, feature film director, you were making very good money.
Yeah. There were way less of them too.
There were way fewer of them. That's true. Yeah. That's totally true. But also, like, if you're like, okay, well, I'm all in on being a director, but the payout is going to be, again, I wasn't into it to be rich, but like, you felt like, oh, well, you'll make, if you get there, you'd make a lot of money. And to be fair to us, I think like we got there, sort of a version of it at least, and do all right, but not enough to have paid yourself back.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
That retirement savings you were planning to hit in your 20s. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, when all my engineer friends were just pumping money into like 401ks and IRAs mm-hmm. and savings accounts, mm-hmm. I was like, why would I put money into like an account that I can't get like access until I'm 65 when I can put it into mm-hmm. like a movie, win mm-hmm. Sundance, then make millions mm-hmm. of dollars when I'm 25, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of gambled on myself and yeah. And so now, yeah, I think we're both do fine. We have families in LA and houses and whatever, but we are still
stressed in a way that those guys
yeah,
are not.
On getting yeah. the next job, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of
in
the next
sense, we're still
yacht.
Paycheck to paycheck. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In a way. Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't need a yacht. That's not what, like, sure, it'd be nice.
May I have your yacht?
Yes. Yes. You may have my yacht. But like, but we're not talking about yachts. We're talking about.
Yeah. Private
college
school.
Funds. We're talking about. Yeah, sure. Private school. That's really what we're talking about. We're talking about like, wouldn't it be nice to be able to send your kid to the best schools?
Yeah. Either.
Right.
Yeah. Or yeah. like living in a neighborhood where the schools are really good. Like a,
yeah.
like a Pasadena of sorts.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that yeah. just for everybody at home, that is a privileged thought, right? But I guess the frustration is like, whatever, you know, you put in the work to be at a certain level and then that,
yeah,
that
level changes.
Paycheck, that level changes.
Yeah.
That's hard.
So
that's
first piece of advice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is don't gamble on yourself. Do put, you know, make your own short yeah. film, but there's no reason to take, 10 years of life savings and dump it into your first feature film, which probably won't be that great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and who knows? Like, maybe if I would have never made that movie, I wouldn't have gotten the next job.
I would argue your feature film being a perfect example. Like, I don't think you have your career without doing that, actually. I'm pretty certain you don't.
I mean, it definitely helped in some way. And I learned a ton. And it actually, you know, I ended up making like yeah. like half my investment little, back too. So
yeah, 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 yeah.
It wasn't.
So that's not so bad.
Yeah, it wasn't a huge zero. But I think.
I guess maybe what I would correct your statement with, like, I think you should gamble on yourself, but like, don't spend money you don't have and don't stop saving or investing in your future as well, right? Like, if you're in a position where you can make and save $100,000, still put some of that money into the IRA. Maybe if you'd put $50,000 into your feature instead, or like made a $10,000 awesome short, maybe that would have been a smarter move. I don't know. But yeah. you still have to work for free. You still have to build your career. You still have to make those features. And also, frankly, the timing is different. Like, you shot that movie on film. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a different deal now, right?
Yeah, it was shot on Red 1.
Oh, pardon me. Red 1. The Red MX.
No, pre-Red anyway. MX. Red 1.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Piece of advice number 2
mm-hmm.
to avoid burnout is, all these pieces of advice I've never taken, but figure out the type of stuff you want to make and basically say no to the type of work that you don't want. That, you know, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. if you...
We're talking about boundaries here, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like creative boundaries, I guess. Like, if you don't want to be making like talking head interviews for eBay, mm-hmm. then don't, you know, if you have a job 2 days here, 3 days there, make a bunch of money, take it. If mm-hmm. it's someone's like, hey, 6 months, come here and work on these eBay interviews. And what you want to do is like Tarantino yeah. style action films, then just start as soon as you can to work on the things that you're excited to make.
Yeah. I think a little bit of a caveat there, right? Like, you have to be aware that Look, if your day job becomes shooting interviews for eBay, look, everyone's got to make a living. But you don't put that on your website. And you have to know that the only phone calls you're going to get, emails you're going to get from the people who make those eBay videos is for more eBay videos. You are pigeonholed there. And so if that's not your passion, but you still need to make money, you have to find another way to show people the things you actually want to be making. And maybe that means that you have to pour some of that money into a spec or a feature or whatever to show that off. But you can't hope that the day job is going to turn into anything besides more day job.
Yeah. And I think,
right.
Yeah. And as it returns to burn, or as it relates to burnout, the sooner you realize you can get work, you can get paid doing the stuff you love, the less you have to do what you love and all these things that you don't love mm-hmm. that also stress mm-hmm. you out at the same time.
Yeah.
That will lead to that burnout.
And it brings back Oren's point of like, do it while you're young. I think, you know, I think there are probably plenty of middle-aged listeners at home who are like, oh boy, I hate this. And we're talking about it because we're both middle-aged guys at this point. I'm technically, you're officially, no, I'm teasing. We're both technically, for the record, everyone. Anyway, the point is that when I had my job at Comedy Central, I would still work nights and weekends shooting the stuff I wanted to be shooting. And that's what launched my career. Same thing with you with quitting your job, right? Mm-hmm. And the thing that makes me feel burnt out is not the work that I'm doing right now. It's that FOMO of knowing that I need to be working on my feature, that I need to be banking hours and all of the other things. Like, I've let my commercial career dry up and need to kind of revitalize that. And that's what's stressing me out. Do you know what I mean? Because I've seen the future. I know what the people who just do my job look like in 20 years. You know, it's a bummer. It's a bummer. It's the drive that's poisoning us, Oren. That's the problem.
Yeah, the constant disappointment with what we're doing right now.
Yeah,
and truly. Seeing other people and truly. Wanting to do what they're doing.
I wonder what a therapist would say about all this. Won't find out. Busy podcasting.
Yeah, this is the therapy session. I think in another way, we're just kind of saying to prioritize, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do the things you have to do for money. Do the things. Mm-hmm. That you are doing because you love doing them and you want to do them. And I've talked about my website a bazillion times, but advice I got was like, take everything off my website that I don't want to be doing. Only leave the things on there that I want to do. And that's helped me a lot to start focusing on work that is related to what I want to do.
It's all a version of tell people what you want to do. We're talking about manifesting a little bit as well, really.
Yeah. And hopefully
but not the woo-woo version of it, just like the practical version of it.
Yeah. And the hope is that if you do stuff you love, that it doesn't burn you out as much, right?
Right. Hopefully. Or leads to a little bit more of what you want to do.
Yeah. And also maybe people will stop calling you for the stuff you don't love because you've told them no a few times. I mean, have you ever had a phase where you're like, hey, thank you so much for calling me to do this thing, this kid's toy playing video or whatever, but that's not really what I do? Have you ever had that conversation where you basically told people not to call you?
I've had a different version of it because I recognized that people will only call you for the things they associate you with, right? And so every time I met a new company, that it was a chance to redefine myself. But all of that started with quitting Comedy Central. Like if every time I met a company and was like, hey, I'm a director who also does development or whatever, or like they meet me through Comedy Central, they don't call me to direct. They call me for help developing something or whatever. Or they don't call me because I've got a job and I'm elsewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I quit so that I could be like, hey, I'm a director and didn't go back to Comedy Central for literally like 5-6 years when I had a real body of work to be like, hey, yeah, you know, I'd love to do something together. But like, I knew that they wouldn't think of me as anything besides what they knew me as until I'd really proven. And keep in mind, I was directing, I was making money on the side and was winning awards as a director while I was there.
Right.
But that wasn't my job. And so they didn't, like, I would literally like be more qualified than lots of, frankly, good directors, but like who weren't in the building. And they would ask those people instead of me because they thought of me as one thing and those outsiders as specialists. Mm-hmm. As people who were really great at the thing that they were looking for.
Yeah, totally.
So yes, in a sense, I had to be like, no, I'm not doing anything like this anymore.
Yeah. Well, the last piece of advice that we wrote here on our list was to surrender.
Well, there's reassess. We skipped reassess.
Is reassess not like the same as kind of turning things down?
No, it's slightly different. So reassess is like, do you really want this?
Oh, right. Is this who you want to be?
Is this who you want to be? Right. And so I think, you know, when you start filmmaking, you have ideas of what you want to be, right? Or you when you quit your job, mm-hmm. it was, you didn't say, okay, I've got $100,000. I'm going to make 15 awesome spec commercials and I'm going to launch my commercial directing career.
Right.
You made a feature, right? And then along the way, you reassessed and you said, oh, I don't want to do that anymore. Or not, that's not my main focus, right? You still are up for features and stuff. And, you know, but your main focus became commercials, right? You reassessed and said, I'm going to become, you're a commercial nerd. You can name all of the different houses and you know people all over the place. And, you know, you care about commercials. You're invested in commercials, right? And that wasn't where you were when you started, right? And kind of, I was like a web series nerd. I had seen every single web video for, I don't know, 7 years probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought it was the future of
entertainment,
independent film, entertainment. Yeah. Entertainment. Exactly. I thought, oh, like the creators will own their own stuff and blah, blah, blah. And then you grow and you change. And so every once in a while you need to say, is this the thing I want to be focusing on? Do I want to keep making independent features? Do I want to keep making commercials? Do I keep on making YouTube channels? Whatever that version is, you know? And so that's a thing, basically, you got to think about, right?
Yeah. I met this actor when I first moved to LA that was like the most exciting actor I've ever, first of all, he was like super cool. He had like this James Dean vibe and he was in all these indie films and horror films. And he was had a movie at Sundance and a movie at Cine Vegas, mm-hmm. which was like Trevor mm-hmm. Roth, the Sundance guy's film festival in Vegas. And he told me, like, I gave him a ride somewhere and he was like, yeah, man. I was like, how's acting? It's like, you know, acting's fine, but like being an actor is really just about auditioning. He's like, if you don't love auditioning, it doesn't matter if you're a mm-hmm. good actor or a bad actor, because that's not, the job is basically auditioning. And like, I love auditioning and that's why I love this life. He was telling me that at the same time I'd read this article about like people who dream of owning their own restaurant or owning a bookshop mm-hmm. and how they want to own a restaurant because they love eating at restaurants and they mm-hmm. want to own a bookshop because they love reading books. But really owning a bookshop is about hard to find labor, like worrying mm-hmm. about, you know, mm-hmm. people not stealing from you, like shoplifters, sure. all these things.
Payroll. You should have gone to business school. You shouldn't have been an English major.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, so it's really like, what's the day to day, you know, of directing a feature. And, you know, we know like, you look at a Terrence Malick or someone that makes a feature every 10 years. Like the day to day of directing a feature of Terrence Malick's work is not hanging out with Brad Pitt on set. You mm-hmm, know, mm-hmm. that's the reward every 10 years.
My wife has a similar anecdote, actually, that she repeats all the time. She started acting when she was a little girl. And she tells the story about going to the first premiere. Or the first movie she was ever in was at the Man's Chinese Theater. It was kind of like, you know, the premiere the way we all imagined premieres would be. There was a red carpet and press and all that stuff. And that's what you think is going to be the thing, the reward. And she had a fine time. D- Do you know what I mean? She picked out her outfit. She was excited. She got her picture taken. But like, I don't really like that. She doesn't really actually like that. Like now we appreciate them a little bit more because it's like our peers and friends. And
yeah.
All that stuff.
Oh, I love a good premiere.
Yeah. A good premiere is fun, but it's not the work is the thing that's fun. The work is the thing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and you realize if you, to your point, like if the job is auditioning, if the job is
pitching,
waking up, pitching,
writing,
waking up at
by
five
yourself
every morning.
In your bedroom. Right.
Exactly. Like you have to like that part. Which kind of really brings us to the third note, the third idea, which is surrender, right? So, like, if you know that that's the thing you like, and if you know that this is a hyper-competitive job, and you've said to yourself, do I still want to do this? And the answer is yes. Then you gotta surrender to it and be like, okay, I'm gonna note a video. I'm gonna note a spot while I'm on vacation, or whatever it is, or I'm gonna wake up at five every morning to put in those pages before my day starts.
Well, what I've been thinking about
and be okay with it, you know.
Yeah, what I've been thinking about lately is the question of whether burnout is a 100% mental thing. Like, is that when you think of burning, you know, you're burnt
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah.
Is it because you have so many things to do? You have more things to do than time to do them? Mm-hmm. Or is it because all you can think about is how many things you have to do and how little time you have to do them and how you've wasted so much time to get them done? Like when I have to write a treatment, it takes me like 3 days to just start writing.
Sure,
and I hate myself. Yeah, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take these next 3 hours and hold on. I'm going to read this one article, eat this food, take this trash out. And then it's like the kid's up and I'm done.
There is a physical limitation that we are all dealing with that frankly gets worse the older you get, right? Like I used to tell stories about how I would wake up at 5:30 every morning to write before I went into work. And I would love to do that now, but that would mean I'd have to go to bed at like 9:30 to really be any sort of version of a person, you know, like,
right.
I don't know how you're doing. You sleep from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m., 7 a.m.?
Yeah, I'm like 1:30 to 6:30 maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I
can't, like, literally today, like, no one was up. I went to sleep really relatively early for me last night, which was 12:30. And this morning at like 6 a.m. I was like, eyes wide open.
Yeah, yeah. I can't. If I'm not hitting up like 6.5 hours, I just can't do it anymore. The way I used to thrive at 6. I used to be like, that was my sweet spot. And was a competitive edge, frankly. Like the people who, speaking of drive being helpful, the people who didn't do that, didn't have screenplays, didn't have web series, didn't have that stuff while they were working day jobs, right? And some people stay up late, I wake up early, whatever. Tomato, tomato. I think that there is a physical aspect to it. But the flip side is, the reason I took this job is because when I was in between things, I was out with my daughter to going to the park, and all I could think about was where that next paycheck was going to come from, because we have responsibilities now in a way that I didn't 4 years ago. And so I wasn't present. I wasn't doing good creative work, and I wasn't being a good partner or father or friend. And so that's why I decided to make a change.
And do you feel like you're thinking about your full-time job now in your off hours?
I certainly am. Yeah, certainly. Because I know that I can't partially commit. You know, I'm always all in. However, this job is manageable in a way that freelance work is all-consuming, because you're either thinking about what you're going to pitch, or pitching, or worried about why you're not pitching.
Right. Yeah.
And at least for me, I literally just didn't have the mental And also, look, reservoirs weren't there, you know, like.
Yeah, no.
You know, it's I needed cash, right? And I was just like, oh, God.
Well, you know. Yeah. I asked that question about whether it's all mental, because like yesterday we were out at the Americana. We were at Barnes mm-hmm. & Noble. I was with my kids. My mm-hmm. wife was mm-hmm. doing something at Nordstrom. It's Father's Day. We just saw Elemental mm-hmm. at the movie theater together. Mm-hmm. And it was a good day. And I had mm-hmm. have this treatment too, but it was off with like the treat. Like we hired a treatment designer. So I wrote everything, kind of pulled a bunch of mm-hmm. images, and he was going to put it all together. And he sent me his first draft, and I looked at it on my phone, Barnes & Noble, after he had mm-hmm. worked on it for 2 days. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is so, so far from where it needs to be. Like the aspect ratio is all wrong. The typography is all wrong. The image selection is all wrong. The colors are all wrong. The like, I didn't like.
You hated it.
Yes.
Yeah.
In other words, I was not a big fan. And we were going to go have dinner together and everything. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. all I could think about is like, I need to go home and I need mm-hmm, to start like, sending notes.
I can't believe you went with Cooper STD, Cooper Standard instead of Bold.
He was like using Helvetica New, which is like a fine font, but it was like, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. I was teasing you about that and you just doubled down on it.
no. Yeah, of course I.
You care about fonts. I know. I'm roasting you for it a little bit.
Well, I thought, I don't know, Cooper STD would have been better. That's all I'm saying.
it must be Cooper Standard. I've never said it out loud before, but STD must be standard, right?
Or something else. STD stands for some other things.
Sorry, Cooper.
Anyway, so I was like, Kara, my wife's like, so where should we go to dinner? What are you in the mood for? And I was like, mm-hmm. honestly, like, and it was Father's Day, so I had a little leeway mm-hmm. to give my opinion and like do the thing I wanted to do. And I was like, the thing that would make me happiest right now is just going home, you figuring out dinner with the kids and me just fixing this freaking treatment so that it's ready in time before we go on our trip. And as I was like having these thoughts in the bookstore and like just so stressed out about it, I was like,
and your kids are like, I want this stuffy.
And those were like, kids were jumping down the 14 escalators they have there. And I was like, I could choose to not worry about this until after dinner, until I get home. Like I could choose to go have a nice dinner with the family and go home, but then it'll be like 11 p.m. before I sit down, and then I'm going to be up till 4 in the morning, like figuring out this treatment, and that's stress. So I just like...
And I think Jordan Brady would say, stay up till 4, which you would if it didn't obliterate you for the next day, right?
Yeah. So my friend Nick Hill, he's an editor and you know, he's one of the owners of Sawhorse and stuff. We would get these jobs. It would be like 5 p.m. and we'd send out an edit and we'd be like, that's it. We're done. Great. It's amazing. This edit is so good or whatever. And literally we'd be like, hey, we're getting drinks.
We're coming
at
5:35.
5:35. As we're like packing things up, we'd get an email. Or it's probably like more like 7 p.m. we send it off. And 7:35, we get this email. It's like, hey, this is all wrong. Like, you got to do this and this. You're missing this. You got to put together this whole sequence and this thing. And like, you're still going to have it done for us by tomorrow morning, right? And I would freak out. I'd be like, what? We got to come. We got to tell them we can't do this. Like, we got to do this. Like, how? And I'd like start, you know, composing the email and talking to the other producer and all the people. Like, how are we going to do? Like, this is crazy. And just like so mad. And literally in all that time, like Nick was just like,
fixed it.
He didn't fix it. It wasn't, they were all like, I wouldn't have freaked out about something you can fix in like 5 minutes, but he would just, there's 100 things to do. He'd be like 4 things in. Now he's 5 things in, you know? I'm like, how are you not freaking out right now? Like, this is going to take us 6 hours. He's like, okay. And we're like, okay, so we'll just work on it for 6 hours. It's like, what else are we going to do?
Well, and so the difference, an important difference between you and Nick in that circumstance is that one of you owns the company and one of you is a freelancer with the company. And so you're both making some sort of money, right? But one of you is investing in the wealth and longevity of their business, and one of you is investing in the longevity and wealth of your career. And those are different propositions. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I saw him do it on like, we would be doing favors for people like, hey, come work on this. Think for me. And he was never intimidated by the amount of work, you know? And me, all I think about is like, how long is this going to take me? How much work? How many things, you know? And like, So I do wonder if like burnout and surrender and what Jordan Brady says, which is like, when I asked him, like, don't you freak out when you have this, you find out you have something due tomorrow morning, you're going to be up all night. And he would say like, yeah, so you work up all night.
Yeah. So that brings me maybe back to my original thought, the origination of where this came from is, as a leader, as a boss, as a person who's trying to kind of observe all of the different ways that people deal with stress, I have people on my team that react the same way that you do. And I have people on my team who are very zen about it and everything in between. Right. And so the question becomes, it's not just like, oh, do you have a disposition that works in this field or not? I kind of reject that as an idea, right? Like, you're doing great, Nick's doing great, and you both have figured out how, but how can you guide people to the balance that we're talking about is the thing that I was just obsessed with. So I feel like we outlined a good number of things. I don't know that I have a prescription for every single person on my team or for myself, but I feel closer. I feel better.
Yeah. And I do think, as annoying as this answer is, it's like different for each person. And you really, you know, like burnout is bad, I guess, because it means you're just like can't handle the workload anymore. But it might mean you just need to take a day off and then get back to it. Or it might mean you need to change your career or leave your family.
I think for you, Oren, I think it is mostly mental. I've been roasting you about what I'm calling the Kaplan combo.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, complaining about not having work and having too much work at the same time.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
I mean, my big beef in this entire industry, and I really don't think there's a solution. I think like if you want to work in this industry, you have to deal with it. But my big beef is all the free work that you need to do in order to get ahead, and just the zero guarantees of any return on your free work, whether it's like writing your feature film, whether it's making your WeFunder campaign or pitching on a commercial or working on your reel, shooting a spec, helping somebody else in hopes that they'll hire you. Like, it's just this whole industry. The only reason it even exists is because there are tens of thousands of people willing to do unlimited amounts of free work just for the opportunity to be in it.
Well, you remind me of when I first was starting and I was making web series. I was very explicit with what the goal was. And that goal was to build a calling card. It was not to make the money back. It was just, I'm going to make a calling card for myself and the people who are working with me. And that was the only goal, and it worked out. Everybody across the board, everyone's careers got better. For sure.
But by the way, that web series could have not been well received, and then it would have all been...
No guarantees. Yeah. No guarantees. But to my point before of like chasing the passion project, chasing the art, the dream, but I also still had a day job, and so did everyone else. I was very explicit of like, hey, because some people worked for free. Some people, none of them were making a living doing this. And so it was nice and clear. And I guess what our problem is that if you're hoping to make a living off of feature films with no guarantee, that's a lot harder than hoping to make a good movie that you stand behind and premiere somewhere good, right?
Yeah. So save some money, folks.
Yeah. Save money. Get your money straight. Save some money. It'll all work out.
Some rich parents.
Yeah, sure. That's true too.
That's another way to do it.
You know, find fulfillment where it lives, where you are. You know, maybe that's the way to do it. Who knows? We haven't figured it out. But pretty close. We're pretty close.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that note.
Yeah, we'd love to know what you all think about burnout. Contact me on LinkedIn. Why not? Or just email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe we'll respond to you. Maybe we won't. No, but we'll read it for sure. Email us justshootitpod@gmail.com and love to hear your thoughts on how you balance your work and your life. With that said, you got a second to endorse something?
Yeah, buddy.
Unpaid endorsements.
I'll kick it off with an endorsement that I endorse wholeheartedly and that you would love and will certainly ignore. And that is the film Paper Moon. We watched a number of movies in the backyard over Father's Day weekend. We watched Three Men and a Baby, Paper Moon, and Father of the Bride. Paper Moon was by far my favorite. I'd call it a full-blown masterpiece. Peter Bogdanovich coming, you know, kind of at the height of his powers, a black and white comedy about a daughter or a presumed daughter and her father kind of grifting their way across Kansas in the Depression. And it is so funny. It is so charming. It's like a little loosey-goosey, like a little stream of consciousness. So like, you know, it's not super, super plot oriented, but it's really, really awesome. Tatum O'Neill and Ryan O'Neill. Tatum won the Oscar. She's the youngest Oscar winner of all time still. They are father and daughter in the movie and in real life. She's incredible in it.
But
she's,
I think,
so funny.
You know, they had like a falling out or something right after that movie. Never spoke again or something.
Never spoke again? Well,
something
boy,
like
oh
that.
Boy. I need to read up on my Paper Moon history, but the movie's really great. It's really, really fun.
Yeah.
And you, Oren, you would really like it and will probably ignore me.
No, I've seen it. What, Paper Moon?
Have
like
you seen
it? Classic movie, yeah.
Yeah, I know, man. I'd never seen it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. What do I got? Have I talked about All the Hacks, that podcast?
I think you have.
So they
keep going. That's okay. Double down. Is there a new episode?
Yeah, an episode just came out where he does listener questions and listener comments. And it's, I think I might have mentioned this, but like recently I've been trying to like get like the credit card points to help me with.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been trying to go on more vacations because, like Matt has mentioned 100 times, COVID is in the rearview mirror. And connected to burnout, like we're trying to take some time away from work on occasion, but it's even more stressful when that time away from work is like $10,000 while you're not making any money, you know, to take your whole family on some trip. So I'm trying to like, you know, whenever I spend money is to have funnels, somehow make that money work. So there's
work for you.
Yeah. So his podcast is basically just about optimizing like these hacks. So, you know, he's like, if you've got the Chase Sapphire credit card, which is like kind of one of the most popular ones for people that care about credit card points, you know, like he people write into him and they tell him like the hacks they did. So they're like, I had my Chase Sapphire, I went to points.me, I got like a first class ticket for 50,000 points and it should have been, you know, it was like $2,500, so I saved this much. And he just kind of like, if you listen to it, you just start like hearing
a general
about
awareness
and about websites. And he'll like something I never ever thought about is like I would get these emails from my credit card saying like, hey, you're gonna get 3% back on dining now or for five times the points on travel, and I just like largely ignored it. But now I realize like my Chase Sapphire gets 3 times the points on dining, streaming services, and and so travel.
Sure.
So I put those things on that, and my Amazon card gets 5% back on like Whole Foods and Amazon purchases. And then, and Yuki, who, you know, friend of ours that listens to the podcast, he always, whenever he would look at a price on Amazon, he'd always subtract 5% from it. And I'd be like, why are you subtracting 5% from it? He's like, oh, because I get 5% back on my Amazon purchases. So if something costs $100, it's like $95. Compared to like if you bought it at B&H Photo, you know, where it would be $100, but maybe you don't have to pay tax. And so I don't know, I'm trying to do this stuff and it's kind of starting to add up. So like right now, I can probably get like a few free business class tickets across the country. And, and I'm trying to, you know, when I fly for work to have them always go on Delta
Flying for work is like a really good hack for directors or anyone with any sort of corporate life. You know, if you can get work to, if you can let them, let you book it on your own personal card and then pay it off immediately. Yeah, that's definitely the way to go. I feel like I'm in my younger years was like too sloppy. I just end up
me
like
too.
I mean, a balance or whatever, you know what I mean? I'd be like, oh, great. And then you spend the $500 you spent on your flight to New York or whatever.
Yeah, or like people get points and they expire and all. Like I'm sure I have many free vacations I could have had if I would have just like been paying any attention to this stuff more than a year ago. The one tip that Yuki gave me that I think is good for everyone is like whenever there is like a points program, I used to never sign up for it because I was like, I don't want to get emails about, you know, American Airlines points program. But Yuki's like, look, every airline here, I have my ID number four. Every hotel, I have my ID number four. And just put, I have, you know, in the notes app on my phone, I just have like one document that has all my membership IDs. And so anytime I go on any airline or any hotel or anything, I put that, you know, I make sure to look it up and put that in. And, you know, I'm starting to like accrue free nights here and free flights there and free upgrades there and lounge access and all that stuff. And, you know, you don't have to be like wealthy or fly first class or any of that stuff.
It's just a little bit of organization. I like that very much. So,
I don't know. All the Hacks is like a really, he actually started the podcast as like a dad podcast because he was a new dad and he's like, I want to do a podcast about being a dad, and quickly realized all these other dads were just like trying to hack their life and the people were much more interested in like how they can hack things in the same way.
Yeah. Do you have an Amazon card?
Yeah. So my main cards now are, I have an Amazon Prime card and I, everything, we buy a lot of stuff on Amazon, unfortunately, and Whole Foods. And so everything from those two places goes on the Amazon card. And Amazon also gets 3X on gas, which barely buy any gas, but I bought some gas yesterday and I put on the Amazon card. And then the Chase Sapphire gets like 5 times the points on Lyft rides, like more on any travel, you get 5 times the points, you get 3 times on dining. And so it all kind of adds up. And
I like having at least like a little delineation of like, okay, this is for this and this is for that. And then you're just, you're good to go.
Yeah. Well, I had them, I was looking at them as my business and my personal cards, Sapphire for business, Amazon Prime for personal, but I don't know, talking to my accountant and all these other people, it's like, you can write off so much stuff in your life. And you might as well just like optimize the points. So I'm trying to, you know, the advice that I told people to take when you're like 25, I'm trying to take it like, you know, 15 to 20 years later.
All right, buddy. Well, good conversation. Maybe I'll go get an Amazon card. I spend too much on Amazon because we don't have time to go to Target. And frankly, I think they're equally evil, give or take. Look, here we are. If you want to... chime in on anything, you can hit us at justshootapod@gmail.com or an already said all this stuff, or we're across all social media at justshootapod. I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow.
And I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Our producer is Tyler Small, and you're listening to music from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. We will catch you next time. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.